You're listening to the Apple Insider Podcast.
Welcome to the Apple Insider Podcast. I'm Victor, and joining me is William Gallagher.
Hello. William Gallagher, who is, in fact, this second, you don't know this because it's happened this second, perplexed for the first time ever, my Apple Watch has crashed. I was just checking to see why it had tapped you on the wrist when you said that, and it's locked up
crashed.
With a clear all message. Okay.
And you can't tap it or anything?
No, it responds to a tap, but then just doesn't do anything. Yeah, so you can see it move the icon, and then it just goes, yeah, I don't care. So I might restart it while you tell me things. I trusted my Apple Watch.
And lots of people do trust their Apple Watch, so much so that I was going to talk to you a little bit about a story about Apple Watch.
Oh, yes.
Now, Apple Watch Connected is this new program. And gyms and fitness facilities and so forth can partner with Apple to use the Apple Watch in tracking workouts, earning rewards, and buying products or services. So there's Basecamp, YMCA, Orange Theory, and Crunch Fitness. And they've partnered with Apple to launch this new Apple Watch Connected program. So members of those firms can book classes, buy products, and earn workout rewards using the Apple Watch.
I'm actually interested in this, even though, face it, I'm never going to fool anybody, I'm not a gym kind of guy. Because I know Apple had this thing of creating something in GymKit, isn't it?
Yeah.
That your watch could pair to the machine in front of you and swap data. But this is something else completely. It's while you're there, you can book classes through your watch and also earn rewards from them, which is...
I mean, it's some of that, right? I mean, you can earn rewards for performing fitness and that you can certainly purchase services and classes and things through the watch. But they also have to accept Apple Pay. So if you wanted to simply pay through the watch, you can. This is interesting. You know, there's a Crunch Fitness nearby me. I wonder if they're taking part in it. It looks like they're launching it in New York in two gyms this week. So we'll see if it drifts down closer to me and I'll be able to review it a little bit. The program
That's
is voluntary.
Very brave of you. Sorry.
So here's the thing, right? You said you're not a gym person.
Yeah,
and,
not so
and
much.
I admit, neither am I really. I do try and do some things for fitness, but I tend to do them in my own home because there's this whole anxiety or fear about being the not gym person who shows up at the gym when everyone else clearly is the gym person.
Right.
But I've come to realize a few things, and one of them is that if you're in the gym, you shouldn't be there to look at other people, and furthermore, other people should not be there to look at you. And if you're not a gym person, they're probably not looking at you. So that add that with the other thing is, you know, no one starts out as a gym person, right?
I am naturally athletic.
No one was born with rippling muscles and low body mass index and low fat percentage and all this stuff, right? That's a byproduct of good diet and work. And so showing up there looking like you have yet to do that work is probably okay. I mean, it's kind of the point.
I'm just torn over this fact that gyms who take part in this must offer a reward system such that in whatever way they do it, you will get some financial reward for it. You get a credit off your next gym bill if you perform certain things, if you exceed certain things. And I'm just wondering if in my case I would end up owing them extra every month.
Well, now we've talked about that before with the health insurance companies, right? There have been these health insurance plans where you can get an Apple Watch, and if you perform enough fitness per month, the watch is yours for free. But if you decline to perform the fitness, if you just wear the thing, then they bill you for it.
It's an excellent idea, isn't it? I mean, that's motivation and a half, and I think I lack that. So, yay them. Although, of course, all of this was announced after I bought my Apple Watch, which, by the way, has now restarted and is working happily again.
Oh, good.
I knew you were worrying.
I was. Hmm. Right. So, this is currently going in New York. YMCA is doing it in the Twin Cities, and they plan to add 22 sites in the next few weeks. Basecamp is going to launch it across the entire U.S. over the next year. Orange Theory has similar plans that are starting with two Manhattan sites. this is something to watch. And I say that without the pun intended, but there it was. The Apple's focus has been to strongly push personal fitness. And the gyms have been trying to figure out how to keep people coming into gyms. You know, if the reward system is that they give people credits that reduce the gym fees,
that's
an enticement to keep coming.
Yeah, it's all good for everybody. Although there is, isn't there, this thing that a lot of gym profits come from the fact that people sign up with good intentions, particularly at the start of the year, and then never come and actually use the equipment, but they're still paying for it.
Yeah.
That is a substantial income for things, and this could reduce that.
Yes, it could, but what are their costs? I mean, their costs are fairly fixed as gyms, and we're going down a rabbit hole here, but you know, the wear and tear on the equipment doesn't happen if no one's using it. So really, it's a very, very profitable kind of thing, provided you have membership drives. Anyway, the interesting part here to us, because, hey, Apple Insider Podcast, is the notion that Apple is supporting this and has these partners lined up, and it works with the watch that many people have.
Yes.
So that's interesting.
So I'm part way to being fit. I've got the watch. So, you know.
Job done.
Exactly.
You bought the watch and you're in perfect health.
Thank you. Yes.
I thank you for sharing your secrets to good physical fitness.
I have a book coming out.
Can you share with me a little bit about Masterclass?
Masterclass. I love Masterclass. I'm currently in the middle of Aaron Sorkin's, is it 3 or 4 hours of writing advice? I zoomed through Jodie Foster's ones about directing. I am a little interested in film directing, but just she's so interesting. I just couldn't get enough of her. Just so, so clever and interesting, utterly absorbing. I was actually sorry when her 3 hours were completed. And I've been pottering around some various other bits. You didn't want me to just babble at it. You wanted me to explain what it
was.
Well,
no, that's fine. So Masterclass is a online learning platform where you get to learn from the best of the best, from people who are top in their field. And I don't think I'm being hyperbolic when I say that. Yeah. You named, you know, Aaron Sorkin and Jodie Foster, and of course there are tons of other people like Will Wright or Annie Leibovitz. There's a lot, Neil Gaiman. There's a lot to learn from here. So can you call out something specific that you learned in one of these recent ones? What was the standout detail?
Oh, okay. Jodie Foster actually convinced me that I will direct a short film this year. Does that count?
Yes.
Okay, there you go. And from Aaron Sorkin, I was utterly delighted at this. He makes... there's a thing I believe as a writer, when you're doing scripts in particular, that doing gigantic backstories for your characters, when they were 5 years old, they ate peas or something, I don't know, that it doesn't help you in any way. And he offers the idea that, no, it doesn't. Yeah, I love how Aaron Sorkin is so upfront about how what's right for him may not be right for you. He calls himself a schmuck every now and again and talks about his peculiar delays on stuff. It's very self-aware, self-mocking, and so useful. But then when Aaron Sorkin says something that I agree with, I feel fantastic.
Nice. Well, that's very positive. Would you recommend that people check it out?
Oh, deeply. Yes. I mean, I'm finding it very hard to just stick with one person at a time. I mean, you can go all over the place. There are, 70-odd things here. But I'm trying to actually use it as a proper studying thing. So I began with Jodie Foster's introduction, and I didn't watch anybody else until I got to the end. And now I'm kind of doing that with Aaron Sorkin, but I did cheat a little bit and started watching Shonda Rhimes' as well and stuff. Yes, absolutely. It's just a gold mine of amazing people telling you great things, and in such detail. I mean, it's very simple, but it really, you come away thinking, you feel like you know these people at the end, and that you have they have genuinely communicated something mostly useful, but other times, I mean, plenty of stuff Jodie Foster talked about with much bigger budget films than I'll ever do. It didn't teach me anything, but it was deeply interesting. So yeah, I just had a good time with that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sign up, watch.
Great. I highly recommend you check it out. get unlimited access to every masterclass, and as an Apple Insider Podcast listener, you get 15% off the annual All Access Pass. Go to masterclass.com/Apple Insider. That's masterclass.com/Apple Insider for 15% off Masterclass. Saudi royalty seems to be implicated in a hack of Jeff Bezos of Amazon's iPhone. This actually happened back in 2018, it appears, but we're only finding out about it now. And what happened is that allegedly a malformed video was sent from the WhatsApp account of Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman to Jeff Bezos. And so the sending of this video caused the iPhone to leak data. Now, okay. Forensic experts are still trying to examine this and understand exactly what happened and what's going on with the leaking of the data, how the exploit was committed, how it was found, so forth. But this is interesting, and it tells you that, you know, you should be judicious and careful in determining what services you use. You know, WhatsApp is, of course, owned by Facebook, and while there is some encryption there, we're going to talk a little bit more about encryption in just a moment, and what the differences are between just an encrypted message and an encrypted message that's encrypted end-to-end.
Yes.
We'll get into that in a moment. So what the other thing that's happened since this report has come out is the United Nations has urged that the U.S. and other governments need to investigate this hack.
I'm just struggling with the idea that a video in one app can do things to other apps. And what about iOS's sandboxing?
Thing about it is that if you have WhatsApp asks for a few different permissions, right? It asks for microphone, it asks for photos and camera access. And right. And it also asks for your address book.
Okay, so if you choose to give it all of these things, it can take all of your photos, it can take all of your addresses and do with it. We don't know what.
Well, okay. I mean, those are the obvious things, right? It's possible that there's another vulnerability that we're not paying attention to or we haven't seen yet. But those are the clear things that it already has permission to get. It also, of course, has access to all of your WhatsApp backups because, well, WhatsApp uses those backups to restore from and to store messages and things like that.
Right, that seems fair.
Right. So it's got a lot of conversation data if you use WhatsApp.
Yes.
Within hours of seeing the video, Bezos' iPhone sent a large amount of data, raising from his daily average of about 430 kilobytes to 126 meg, which is a staggering.
But why growth. Hours? Why not instantaneously? And does he not use his iPhone very much?
Undetermined. Mm-hmm. But the data spike continued for months. Hmm. Indicating that gigabytes of data was accessed.
Do we know how it was stopped or when it was stopped even? Probably not.
Not entirely certain when it was stopped. FTI have been analyzing this, and they used a Cellebrite device to acquire forensic images over a two-day period. And so this is sort of a developing story, but... It's very interesting. There's going to be some interesting information to come out of this, especially once a good examination has been done of the video file so we can understand what the vulnerability actually was, what the exploit was.
This is hardly the same thing as hacking, but I did find it very irritating that WhatsApp, I think by default, was saving any images anybody sent me into my camera roll.
Yeah, it does that.
So I'll get some theater stuff. Yeah, that's very nice. Thank you. You look great. I don't want to keep it. And yet it was clogging up everything. There is an option to switch it off because I found that and I switched it off. But yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you can switch that off. And it's probably a good idea too if you have groups that send quite a lot of photos.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But it's one of those things that you have to consider is what's your level of use with this kind of application and what's your level of trust with it? Now, we talked a minute ago. I said I was going to talk a little bit about encryption. So here's the thing. We talked last week about the U.S. government and their interest in having a backdoor into iPhone encryption.
Yeah.
And some people were upset about that. There was a listener who gave us an iTunes review of 2 stars because they think we just don't like the U.S. government. That's not true. And that's definitely not what's important here. What's important here is talking about whether it's right for governments to have this level of access to our personal information and personal devices, and how that should be managed, and who gets to say, and who gets to control information. You know, there's a lot of questions about that. And if you look at the U.S. Constitution, bear with me for just 1 second, a large number of the Bill of Rights and the U.S. Constitution is formed about protecting the individual and state interests against the federal government. You know, Congress shall make no law, Congress shall have no right. It's all about protecting the individual. And so it's a valid thing to go ahead and say, what is the interest here? And what are the competing interests here? And how should we address it? And personally, yes, I stand strongly on the side of encryption is a good that protects the large number of iPhone users and can only be helpful. That the idea of cracking it or breaking it is going to make things worse appreciably for the vast majority of people. That's my position. I've said it. But that's not anything about this particular government.
We don't have a written constitution at all, really, in the UK, but I have similar concerns here, and we do for any government anywhere in the world. And once one can get a backdoor into this, everybody can. So it's a worldwide issue, not only a US one, in my opinion.
Absolutely. It just happens to be taking place in the US at this time, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, at least because Apple is there. Is Samsung under similar? No, it wouldn't be Samsung, would it? Is Google under similar pressure to crack open Android? I imagine it must be.
Well, but Google does things a little bit differently, and I've been looking at this a little bit, and I don't have firm answers yet. But Google does do encryption, and Google also has for Google devices encrypted backups. So we should talk a little bit about this because I had an email from one of our listeners that I'm opening up right now, going into the mailbox. I'm just going to quote the email. Hi, Victor. I came across a worrisome article that states that Apple's abandoned the development of end-to-end encryption for iCloud backups. Now, Reuters was publishing this over the weekend, I think. And I have a few questions which I was hoping you'd have answers. Can Apple access iMessage data that's been backed up to iCloud? And if so, can they give that data to law enforcement entities around the world? If the answer to that first question is yes, can Black Hat hackers access iCloud data by retrieving the encryption keys to which Apple has access? With respect to security and privacy, are we better off just backing up our data to the Mac manually? Hope all is well and look forward to hearing from you. Well, from the most paranoid point of view.
Yes.
The right way to think of the cloud is it's a computer you don't own.
Yep.
Is backing up your very sensitive data to a computer that you do not own the best thought out plan?
Okay.
Now, mitigating that a little bit is that there are encryption keys involved, right? And so what happens with iCloud data is that it is encrypted, but Apple also has a key. And so your device is encrypted and you have the keys. Apple does not. But for the information that you've stored in their cloud, they keep a key. And they say that they keep the key so that if you lost your password, that they would be able to unlock it for you. And this is obviously something that's come up as a customer support problem a number of times, right? People lose passwords. People lose access to stuff. It happens. And so people have asked Apple to be able to unlock it. Now, in years past, there were things where Apple would say, if you lose this, we can't unlock it. You lose all your data. And people are obviously not happy about hearing that, especially when they've lost all their data. So it's a difficult situation, and Apple's trying to balance the needs of the end user and what's going to make for a good user experience and security. If you're backing up iMessage data, iCloud, I suspect strongly, yes, they can go ahead and have that, access to that and can share it.
It doesn't seem very many weeks ago that you were entirely happy about everything, and now cynical, bruised, a little bit worried, a little bit sage, a little bit older, a little bit wiser.
I'm just happy you're here to share this with me.
Right.
In times where people are concerned about what is the security of their data, it's definitely, I'm glad I'm in good company. So I think the thing that some people are concerned about is whether or not Apple has abandoned the idea of end-to-end encryption for iCloud backups. So end-to-end encryption is not something we currently have with iCloud backups. Currently we have encryption, but Apple has a key. End-to-end encryption says that basically only you can have the key and only you can access it.
Yes.
That there is no way for a middleman to get in the middle and decrypt.
Yes.
And we don't know if Apple's abandoned those plans. The current coverage suggests that they have, but it's undetermined if they have, and it's also undetermined if they have as a result of the 2016 push for iCloud data and unlocking phones.
That's decided it. Forget it. I'm moving to Android. There you go.
Well,
all
you
sorted.
Could do that.
Yep. No, you're going to try. You attempting to talk me out of this?
No, I'm not going to attempt to talk you out of that. But I think I will answer our listener's question, which is, with respect to security and privacy, are we better off just backing up our data to the Mac manually? If you have strong security and privacy concerns, yes. But you have to balance those concerns a little bit, because one of the things about iCloud is the ability to restore back from a backup, the ability to do it without necessarily having access to that Mac. There's a lot of convenience there, and Apple has spent years baking that convenience in. And so you need to think carefully what you're focused on. Are you focused strongly on security and privacy, or are you focused on ease or some compromise between the two? And that's the very same question that Apple is having to balance in terms of what their plans are for end-to-end encryption for iCloud backups. And you know what I'd like at this very moment? What would be really helpful in trying to understand these issues would be a letter from Tim Cook. You know, an article that they could post entitled something like "Thoughts on Encryption" would be really revealing.
Okay. Is that a deliberate callback to the thoughts on Flash?
Absolutely.
In this week in which Flash looks like it's dead. I want to sing. I want to say Flash is going away. Yes.
Yeah.
That's a thought. Has Apple done anything yet with privacyisimportant.com? It must be getting on for a year since that was launched, wasn't it? May I have something? Nope, there's absolutely nothing there still.
The problem that Apple has is that they champion this a lot, right? They champion,
yes.
They put up billboards, they covered hotels with what stays on your iPhone, what is on your iPhone stays on your iPhone, something like that, right? That was the Las Vegas billboard they put up over the hotel down there. And they've championed privacy. And so the notion that iCloud backups aren't end-to-end encrypted, that Apple has a key that can unlock them, even though encryption is good and they are encrypting them, some people may see that as a betrayal.
I see that. I don't know what I think about it yet, but I see that point. Yes.
So the problem is that, right, people aren't necessarily concerned about the finer points, and this is a nuanced problem.
Yeah.
You know, when Apple tells you that the iPhone is safe and secure and that your data is secure, and then it turns out that they have a key, that can feel like a betrayal, even if it not necessarily is.
Apple's actually pretty good at conveying nuanced things. The whole thing we've said before about the San Bernardino shooting in such a heated moment, they were still able to convey so well the larger picture that people tended to be on their side in Apple versus the FBI, which is, you know, actually, I mean, just as communications, is a remarkable piece of work.
Yeah. Now, President Trump has repeated his previous demand that Apple help investigators unlock iPhones tied to criminal cases. He told CNBC at the World Economic Forum in Davos, "Apple has to help us, and I'm very strong on it. They have the keys to so many criminals and criminal minds, and we can do things. I've given them waivers because it's a great company, but it made a big difference." So he is still asking for, or still joining Department of Justice and Attorney General Barr in asking Apple to unlock these iPhones. And of course, tech companies and privacy advocates insist that adding a backdoor encryption fundamentally weakens it.
Removes it, really, I think, yes.
I would agree with you. That's the correct way of thinking of it. So what does Apple give up when issued a subpoena? What is it that they do provide?
Well, actually, I was looking into this for Apple Insider, and I am astonished how much Apple will give up under the right circumstances. I mean, let's just preface all of this with the correct warrants, the right subpoenas, a legitimate law enforcement agency asking, all of these things. It has an amazing amount that it can give up to do with all of your transaction history, for example, everything you've ever bought on iTunes. I didn't quite follow this bit, actually. Apple says that it won't give the contents of email messages, but it will give you dates, times, and recipients both ways for it. But it only keeps that data for about 30 days. Now, we obviously have emails going back a lot longer. I'm not clear where Apple keeps them for 30 days, but you know, it can give you a conversation history if it can't give you the conversation, and it has apparently done that for things. There's also a lot of stuff about going into retail stores. It can do that there. What else was that was really surprising to me? Now, I remember thinking, I get mixed up between messages and text messages.
Right. So text messages or SMS are traditionally not encrypted by anything, right? They interoperate between different carriers. They don't go through Apple's servers. They go directly to your carrier's server.
Yeah.
And transfer out that way. And so they historically are not encrypted.
Oh, actually, sorry, that has reminded me. That's another thing. Apple, under certain circumstances, all that stuff, can give call records out in the same way it does email. But that one troubled me because your carrier's got all that detail as well.
Yeah.
And nobody seems to be saying that the carriers are resisting giving this stuff up.
That because the carriers hand that over regularly whenever asked.
Fair enough. Well, at least they're consistent. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, email is encrypted in transit, but not at rest. And that's pretty normal for email. That's pretty common unless you use a service or set up things to encrypt your email in at rest as well.
Okay.
So that's fairly common. That's pretty normal. When you store iMessages in iCloud, then Apple can give up that data that's in iCloud. So the encryption key for iMessages will be stored as a part of the iCloud backup. If you enable the messages in iCloud option, the messages themselves are not included in iCloud backups. The encryption key, however, is included and it's still accessible. If you've done messages in the cloud, then the whole container is backed up to iCloud so that users can recover their messages, which is part of that point. If you turn off that part of the iCloud backup, then the new encryption keys gets generated and it protects future messages on your device and it isn't stored by Apple. So there we go back to the thing that I just said, right? If you choose to store things not in the cloud, then they become more secure.
Yeah, in the sense of bad people trying to get at them, but you also limit your access to things. Being able to recover from wherever you are
is correct.
Oh, you said it's the convenient, that which is amazingly useful. You are surrendering that.
Mm-hmm. You have to make choices.
When did we have to start making choices? I don't know.
From the second we came upon this earth, we started to make choices.
Okay, this is getting deep now.
It was awfully broad there, wasn't it?
Yeah, a tiny bit. Yeah. I'm just thinking about tea, but that's my default position anyway.
But then you have to choose which tea, and then...
Actually, not so choices. Much, no.
Well,
no. Yorkshire tea.
I know, Builders you endorse brew, Yorkshire
we're
tea.
We're fine. Yes. Yeah, it's easy, really.
Okay. It is.
Well, I like peachy chips as well, but you're right, let's not go down.
Typhoon like isn't as well. Bad.
Yeah, you see. Yeah. I think you can get peachy chips more easily in the States than you can.
So we can.
Yorkshire tea. Yes.
I want to tell you about something that can actually make your life a little more safer, a little simpler, and a little more secure. We work towards a future where you are your ID, right? You mm-hmm. use Face ID, you use Touch ID. And there's a service that can enable you to use these kinds of identifiers to make your life easier at stadiums, other venues, and actually go through security faster at airports.
Okay, that sounds rather good.
Yeah. So, when I go through airports, I frequently do TSA PreCheck or Global Entry, which operates about the same way, because I like to go through without stress. I like to make sure that I'm going to go through quickly, easily, and make sure that I don't miss my plane, that I have plenty of time at the gate or in the club, the lounge, and that life goes more smoothly. And clear... Okay. Go on, ask me.
Just, I know we have similar things here, but I don't know what they are and what the equivalent is. So this TSA thing is, how does that work? You mentioned something called Clear there, but before you get Clear,
okay, so the U.S. government has two services. One is called TSA Pre-Check, and the other is Global Entry. And Global Entry encompasses Pre-Check, but adds on some international flavor parts to it. And you pay, and you have to do an interview and be approved, and once they decide that you're a trusted traveler, then they issue you this number, and it allows you to go through the security checkpoints at airports much more quickly.
Okay, right, yes.
Mm-hmm. Tends to be shorter lines, tends to not require you to take off your belt or your shoes, or in some cases not have to remove your laptop from your bag, things like that. So... reduced hassle, less stress. Now, Clear gives you peace of mind because Clear helps you zip through airport security even faster so you can relax before your flight. They use the tap of the finger so they use your eyes and fingertips to confirm that you are you and help you get through security faster. So you are your best ID. And you enroll quickly and easily. It takes about 5 minutes. There's no appointment, and you can use Clear right then and there. So you can get through airport security faster in about 65 airports, sports venues, and other locations across the country. And we were talking about this before when we were talking about before we started recording. You know, things like Las Vegas, LAX, JFK, LaGuardia, Denver, AT&T Field in San Francisco, Coors Field in Denver. There's a bunch of different places that this can be used. Hartsfield in Atlanta. And what they're doing is they're not separate from TSA. They're not instead of TSA PreCheck. They're partners with Clear. And so it's not instead of, it's in addition to. And just helps you go through without any stress. Clear members can add up to 3 adult family members for the discounted rate of only $50 each per year. Kids under 18 can tag along for free when traveling with a Clear member. So it is really awesome.
I actually find time runs at a different rate when I'm in an airport. I tend not to be too concerned about how things are taking. I don't know why, but I do get very stressed about missing a flight because I did once a press trip from Heathrow to Dublin. I missed it.
Well, at least with Heathrow to Dublin, there's enough flights during the day that it's not like you've missed the one.
True, and also this was it was so long ago and such an innocent world. He just said, "Oh, go on then, you can get on this flight instead."
Nice.
It was actually a very complicated press trip to 2 different airports. I missed most of the trip, but I ended up in Dublin Airport, whatever that's called. I've forgotten now. When the rest of my party arrived, and their faces when they walked through the gate, and I was already there for them. That was almost worth the embarrassment.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah. Now, So Clear is the absolute best way to get through airport security. It works great with PreCheck too. And right now, listeners of our show can get their first 2 months of Clear for free. Go to clearme.com/appleinsider and use the code appleinsider. That's clearme, clearme.com/appleinsider with the code appleinsider for your free 2 months of Clear. Yeah, I can just imagine people's faces when you are already there. That's brilliant.
Yeah, the nice PR company that was paying for my flights was less pleased, as you can well understand. So I'm, as well as my own stress at missing, I am mortified at having... This is 20 years ago, and I'm still mortified for them.
I understand that feeling. No, I understand that feeling so well.
Okay. Thanks for bringing it back, though. You know,
yeah,
it's absolutely in front of my mind and again.
It will be all right.
Yeah, listen, I just need to phone a PR company again and apologize.
None of the employees for that PR company are still there. They're all moved on to other PR companies, so you don't really have to worry too badly.
Right, the way I took that is I have no hope. I'll carry this guilt forever. They can't absolve me of it at this distance. Okay, I could phone them up and they'll just say, yeah, Nutter on line one, absolve him. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Now, you like iPhones, don't you?
I have been known to, yes, yeah. From time to time.
What if there were more of them in the world?
I suppose I only really need... Well, I was going to say I only need one, but I actually use three on different projects. Yes.
Yes. Well, so Wistron is one of Apple's assembly partners, and they are increasing their production capacity in India, ramping up productivity for their third plant in the country.
Wow. Okay. India's a really interesting... I mean, India's an interesting country regardless, but with what's going on with Apple, it's particularly... interesting there. I think that's good to see. Yeah. Well done, everybody
and
there. Yeah.
The two existing plants have used for production of iPhone SE and iPhone 6S, intended for sale on the local market. The new facility is going to join the other two in making iPhones, according to industry observers. Now, Foxconn also has plants in India, and they were making the iPhone 10R or XR in October, with a view to making the iPhone 11 down the line. India is a really important market.
Yeah. Well, and size of it and anything else, yes.
Size of it, and there's a lot of production there. Four plants, can you imagine?
I actually don't know how many plants there are in other countries, but it seems like a big concentration of it. So that's cool. Okay.
It does.
Can you imagine
it's really
the iPhone
impressive.
SE there? I wonder if this is where the alleged iPhone SE 2 or iPhone 9, or whichever way Apple is going to count this thing, is going to start out there too.
This no is just idea. No idea. I what I would tell you is that they would use trusted partners that have already been making phones for years. So you might expect it to go to a Foxconn, or I guess it could go to Wistron, but probably one of those two. Or maybe they'd divide production between the two. That you'd expect it. I would think it would come out of China first, but I might be mistaken.
That makes sense. I'm thinking about it because a friend is so certain it's coming. He's actually putting off. It's weird. He's putting off buying a MacBook because he's waiting for the iPhone SE. Yeah, it's complicated to do with what Reminders works on and iOS levels and things. And it all makes sense when you dig into it. But he's absolutely certain that it's coming, and he knows the same things I do. I'm a little warier.
I'm envisioning this friend having a wall board with bits of red string linking different articles to try and suss out exactly how he's holding off on a MacBook purchase because he's worried about an iPhone.
That's... Or was it an iMac? I'm mixed up now. But he is a writer with a corkboard, so if I send him some red string, we could be in business. Yes.
I think we have to.
Okay. So I need to find a PR company to apologize.
Go on, for 20 years ago. Red string.
Yeah, so, you're right. That could take a little while to explain, couldn't it? Okay. Well, that's the rest of my day. Yeah.
There we go. And on that note, this is the Apple Insider Podcast. William, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, I'll be on the phone, but right beside me, I will be on W. Gallagher on Twitter and William@appleinsider.com. What will you be doing and where can people find you?
I'm V. Marks on Twitter, Victor@appleinsider.com. Please feel free to send us your compliments, your complaints. We'll hear them all. We might even respond to them. And we're so glad you joined us this week. We hope to hear you back next week.